Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to GE Shipping Earnings Call on Declaration of its Financial Results for the Quarter and Year Ended March 31st, 2023. At this moment, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please click on Raise Hand button on the toolbar at the bottom of your screen. I now hand over the conference to Mr. Shiv Kumar G, Group CFO at GE Shipping, to start the proceedings. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sanvi. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this conference call to discuss the results for Q4 FY23. We'll do a quick run-through of the results, and after that, we'll look at what's been happening in the markets. Tanvi, I think I need to have the control for the presentation.
Yes, sir. I have passed on to you right now.
Yeah, thank you. So highlights, highest ever net profit of 2,575 crores, beating our earlier record, which was in 2008-9, which was under 1,400 crores, beating that by a huge margin. Also, our consolidated net asset value has moved up by almost 70% in FY23, and we'll look at the components of that also. Thanks to these results, we have also announced our highest ever dividends, four interim dividends totaling to 28.8 rupees per share. Today we declared, the board declared, a fourth interim dividend of 9 rupees. So including that, we have announced dividends of 28.8 rupees per share. Going through the results, we have declared a net profit, standalone net profit for the quarter of 632 crores. On a consolidated basis, we have declared a profit of 722 crores. Cash flows have been strong. We've gone into a net cash situation. So let's go through the numbers in detail. You know, we normally look at what we call normalized financials, which removes the effect of currency on revaluations and the derivatives MTM. So let's look at that. It's not very different. On a standalone basis, our net profit is higher to the extent of 30 crores. So we are at 662 crores. On a consolidated basis, we are at 699 crores for the quarter. So we mentioned here what's happened to the net asset value. The standalone net asset value, which was 618 rupees per share in March 22, is now at 962 rupees per share. So that's gone up more than 50%. The consolidated NAV has also gone up very significantly. We were at a midpoint of about 678 rupees per share. Now we are at about 1160 rupees per share, which is almost 70% increase. I won't go into the ratios here. These are things that you can work out itself, and we spend our time on more value-adding things. Market commentary, we continued our strong performance. Tankers continue to be very strong as they have been through most of the financial year. As we had expected, and in keeping with seasonality, dry bulk markets were quite weak in the Jan-March quarter, and they recovered towards the end of March. Tanker asset prices are now at their highest level since 2009. Even bulker values, despite having a low spot market, have gone up during the quarter. And this is probably due to the optimism caused by the low level of the order book. And we'll look at the order book later. The consolidated NAV, I've mentioned it before, has reached 1,164 per share at the midpoint of the asset values. And this rise is due to both increase in asset values and very strong cash profits. The offshore market has also strengthened during the year, and recent contract pricings have been at significantly higher levels than the previous contracts. We are waiting for vessels to come up for repricing, and you know, these tenders come up not very frequently. It's not like you have a daily pricing like you have in shipping, but recent pricing points have shown significant increases in pricing. And of course, at the end, while we continue to enjoy the strong rates in the market, we must keep in mind that recessionary pressures may be building up in some advanced economies. You can see it in oil demand, gas oil demand specifically, that is diesel, that seems to be suffering a little bit. And you can see it in the refining margins as well. Just looking at the performance, and look at the table at the bottom, which shows you the difference between the earnings in FY22 and FY23. Crude carriers earned about $35,000 per day more than in the previous year. Product tankers earned about $23,000-$24,000 a day more on average. LPG ships, which are typically on time charter, were about the same. And dry bulk ships were a little lower because the market was weaker. But it just shows you how much impact. So just to give you an idea, this increase in the crude tanker rates, and we are talking about 25 ships as of tankers as of date. And, you know, with a $25,000 day, dollars per day on average increase means more than $200 million in a year. So 25 ships constitute somewhere between 8,500 and 9,000 operating days in a year. And that has huge leverage in terms of the results. And as you all know, the cost basis remains the same. It's just operating expenses, because we are measuring this after fuel expenses. So that shows you the power of the operating leverage in changing the in the P&L. Now let's look at how the standalone net asset value has changed. We started at 618, ended at 962. 200 rupees of that change was from cash profits. So that's actual cash which has come into the into our bank. It is not a mark-to-market increase in value of the assets. That's 168 rupees per share. That's a fleet value increase. So 200 rupees has actually come into the bank, of course, which has helped us to become net cash from net debt at the beginning of last year. And of course, you have minus 25, which is the dividends which have been paid out during the last financial year, which then takes us to 962 rupees per share of net asset value. The CAGR over the last 5 years has been 22% in the net asset value. We started at 357 rupees per share, and this is now at 962. Similarly, in consolidated net asset value, our cash profit was about, again, between the cash profit and fleet value, each of them about 250 rupees per share, and minus the dividend, which takes us from 692 to 1164. Let's look at the shipping markets and see what they've been doing. So the left graph is the Suezmax crude tanker. Obviously, the FY23 graph is much stronger than the FY22 graph. And FY24 started off stronger than FY23 started. So this is where we are. We average, and this is the market averages. These are not our averages. The market, which averaged less than $10,000 a day for a Suezmax tanker, this year, that same measure averaged $57,000 a day. For an MR tanker, it went up from $7,500 a day to $36,000 a day. Again, what led to this? Specifically, let's look at the water. Crude and tank, product tanker spot earnings continue to be elevated. On Q4 year-on-year, the trade, the crude trade, which is in ton miles, grew by about 11%, and product trade grew by about 9% year-on-year. That's Q4 FY23 versus Q4 FY22. At the other end, on the supply side, the crude supply growth was only 4%. And the product supply growth was only 2%. The EU embargo on Russian imports for crude, it kicked in from December 5th, 2022, and for products, it kicked in from February 5th, 2023, further boosted ton-mile growth. Asset prices, we've already mentioned that we are now at the strongest level in the last 14-15 years. The critical thing is that the order book for crude tankers is now at 2.5% of the existing fleet, which takes away a lot of, or rather, it's a big positive because the future supply is very constrained, and therefore you need only a very small increase in demand in order to keep the market tight. In product tankers, this also was at a low number, probably around 5% when we last met. It's been building up recently, so it's now currently at about 8% of the fleet. On dry bulk, we had a softer market in Q4, which again is a typical seasonal pattern, which picked up towards the end of March and is at reasonable levels. So we are at around, for Cape sizes, we are at around the same levels we were last year. For the smaller ships, and last year, remember, the smaller ships outperformed the larger ships for a large part of the year. The smaller ships are doing much worse. So the Supramaxes, which you can see in the right side graph, which were at almost $30,000 a day in April last year, are somewhere in the $10,000 to $15,000 per day in this year. So basically, the COVID-related congestion which unwound released a significant part of the fleet into the market. The demand side was quite strong. So Chinese steel production, iron ore imports were all up during the quarter. Coal imports into India and China both continued to increase. So the main factor was that the release of capacity from congestion, which weighed down the supply-demand balance. LPG continued to be strong. So we had a very strong fourth quarter of last year, fourth quarter of 2022 calendar, and it came off from those highs, but still at pretty strong levels at about 70,000. Again, our ships are all on time charter, so we are not exposed to this spot market currently. But the markets have been strong. US LPG exports are up 20% year on year, which is a spectacular number. In this sector, this is the only one of all the ship types that we have. And the VLGC order book, this is the only order book which is really high, a high level in the historical context, in excess of 20% order book. So, yeah, we looked at fleet supply, and I mentioned these numbers earlier. In the orange, you have the crude tanker order book. The blue is the product tanker order book, and green is the dry bulk order book. Looking at asset prices, all asset prices have gone up. I mentioned that even dry bulk went up in value despite earnings being low. So there is a lot of optimism around shipping markets. So asset prices are looking quite elevated. In scrapping, there hasn't been much scrapping because markets have been quite strong. So you see calendar 22, there's very minimal scrapping there. All of this is for building up. At some point, these ships have to go. Looking at the offshore business, and this is almost a repeat of what we had said the last time. The Middle East is a big driver of incremental demand, and it's expected that Saudi Aramco will have 85 to 90 units on term contracts of the jack-up rig on fleet on term contracts. And that's a big number which is absorbed, and a lot of those contracts have already been awarded. They're just waiting to go into the contracts. So the utilization of rigs, which went down to low 60s in 2016-17, is probably close to 90% now on an effective utilization basis, which we have seen reflecting in the pricing. We had a very significant increase in the pricing in the last tender that we priced in India. So let's see how the next tender prices from now on. And of course, supply side, nobody has been ordering rigs or supply vessels for the last 6-7 years, ever since the price of oil dropped from around 100 to around the 30s in 2015. It's unlikely. A lot of the yards have gone out of business. And so it's unlikely that there will be significant capacity coming into the markets. Looking at just the fleet supply, the current fleet is just under 400 of jack-up rigs. The fleet under contract is 344. And we have, so of these rigs, basically about 430 rigs are actively marketed. The others are more or less stacked or unlikely to be marketed. Of those, so out of the rig fleet which is existing, 344 are already on contract, and about 40 to 45 have contracts and are due to go into contract. So that means that you have 385 to 390 rigs working out of an effective total of 430 rigs, which means about a 90% utilization of the rig fleet. In the vessels, it's not as tight, but a lot of the vessels have been stacked for a significant amount of time and are unlikely to come back into the operating fleet. This is the utilization, and the utilization has been pretty strong, has been strengthening over the past couple of years. We have repricings coming up, and which is good because all the repricings are happening at higher levels than their previous contracts. The previous contracts were fixed in 2017 to 19, which was the trough of the market. So in the first half of this year, we have 5 vessels to be repriced. In the second half of this financial year, we have 4 vessels to be repriced. Then in the first half of FY25, we have 6 vessels to be repriced. And we have 1 rig which comes off contract around this time next year. And then in H2 of FY25, we have 1 more vessel and we have 1 rig which needs to be repriced. We had bought a vessel, an 80-ton anchor handler, in the month of February. We took delivery in March. That vessel has already been delivered to us and is already working and has also got a 3-year contract in India. Looking at broad financials again, we levered up in between 2016 and 19, and then strong cash flows enabled us to reduce our leverage. In fact, we are in net cash now. This is share price to consolidated NAV. We are at about 0.5 to 0.6. So that brings me to the end of the presentation. We are happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, please click on the raise hand icon available on the toolbar, or you may click on Q&A icon to raise your hand. The operator will announce your name when it is your turn to ask a question. Please accept the prompt on your screen and unmute your microphone while proceeding with your question. Or you may also submit a text question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Abhishek Nigam from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, hi. So just 2 questions for me. Number one, what is driving the sharp improvement in profitability in the fourth quarter?
Okay. Hi, Abhishek. So are you referring to the shipping business or the offshore business?
Oh, sorry, the offshore business. Yes.
So the offshore business basically had a tax write back. We won a case, an appeal, and so there was a tax write back for the offshore business.
Okay.
So that's one of the largest factors. There was a 45 crore write back of tax.
Okay, fair enough. But that impact comes before the operating profit line, is it?
No. So you're talking about PBIT level?
Yes.
So the increase in profitability will be just that we, just repricing because we were off contract, and then we went onto the contract. We had rig off hire days, which has now got removed. The rig was working through the quarter. We had all our 4 rigs working through the quarter, where we had a rig which was not working up to October, November.
Okay.
So,
okay. Fair
and
enough.
We've had, so in the international market, we've had improvements in pricing as well. But that's 3 or 4 vessels, so it will not really move the needle much.
Fair enough. So this kind of EBIT run rate for offshore, this is kind of sustainable over the next 2 quarters, right?
Yes, we have, okay, I don't want to make a forecast, but yes, we should be in a position to maintain whatever we are doing on an operating level.
Okay, fair enough. That's very useful. And on the OSV fleet, is it possible to give us a sense of where the day rates are? So for example, if I look at Tidewater, then I think they are closer to that $10,000 to $13,000 or so range in mm-hmm. Asia Pacific. Is that where we are, or are we at a slight discount, or, you know, if you can just give us a sense, not exact number.
So it's very difficult to compare these things because the operating expenses in different regions are so different. But recent pricings, even in India, are 10,000 and above for supply vessels. And again, I don't know what kind of vessels you're referring to with the, for Tidewater, and whether it's just a blended of all their vessels, because they also have some high-spec vessels. But recent pricing for term contracts in India also have been around 10,000 or higher.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Last question for me. So, you know, there is an order book of 20 jack-up rigs for, in your presentation for the offshore segment. I'm just wondering if these are credible orders, or are these really orders which, you know, customers
place? These are all ancient orders. So these are rigs which are half built, almost waiting for delivery. We don't know if they'll ever come into the market. But a lot of them got reactivated last year. You know, some people went and bought them, put them into Saudi Aramco and ADNOC contracts.
Fair enough. Yeah, I remember Keppel has placed a couple of these with customers globally. So okay,
that's
so right. These may or may not come through eventually.
No. Yeah, correct. See, these will typically be some Chinese rigs, I suspect. I think Keppel is more or less out of all their rigs.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough. That's it from me. And
but just on that segment results, I think it does include that tax write back. So you shouldn't take this as the run rate going forward.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Khetan from Laburnum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity.
Good evening.
So I had a very industry-related question. Just wanted your perspective on a, you know, tail event. So there's a very large and growing dark fleet which is transporting Russian oil. These are mostly on very old tankers, which should ideally have been scrapped, right? Now, the risk of a major oil spill, which would have been minuscule earlier, has probably increased exponentially. How do you guys think about this risk? And based on historical experience, what's your sense of, you know, how the industry might be impacted if there is a major oil spill on the high seas?
So, typically, if there is a significant oil spill, by the way, there was an accident, luckily not on a laden tanker, off Singapore, Malaysia last week, on a tanker, which there was an explosion on it. But typically, if you have an oil spill, it leads to much more regulation. Now, these ships are already outside regulation, the dark fleet. So, I don't know how it will impact, but there will be a lot more urgency with regard to the dark fleet. And maybe there will be a clampdown on those ships going forward. It's tough to say what could happen if there is an incident. But yes, certainly if there is because an oil spill is such a public thing and which really affects a lot of people, there will be a regulatory clampdown potentially if there is an oil spill from one of these ships.
Understood. So it's fair to assume there would be an acceleration in scrapping if that happens?
if that happens and there is, you know, there's a clampdown on the dark fleet, yes. Yes, but, you know, there are a lot of things that can happen then because it's not going to happen by itself. If the dark fleet is removed, then that oil gets, how does that oil get transported? The Russian oil. Is that just removed from the market? Because then if that's removed from the market, then what happens to the oil supply-demand balance for oil itself? So there are a lot of things that go into that equation that we have to consider.
Got it. Secondly, again, you know, I've asked this before as well. Are you seeing any opportunities for capital allocation right now?
Unfortunately, in terms of ships, no. As I mentioned that the dry bulk market was weak, but asset prices did not come off. They went up a little bit. In fact, they've gone up a little bit even after March 31st, a little further. So no, prices are not yet at attractive levels. And tankers, of course, are 14, 15 year highs.
But
not yet any opportunities for capital allocation, unfortunately.
Got it. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Himanshu Upadhyay from O3 PMS. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes. Hi, Himanshu.
Yes.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Hi, Shiv. Congrats on great set of numbers. I have a question. Okay. Historically, our thought process has been that whenever we are around 50% or round the NAV, we would like to do a buyback or those things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the means around 500, 550 used to be the NAV and the stock used to be around 300 or we would do a buybacks, okay? Currently, the NAV is around 1200 rupees, okay?
Yeah.
And the stock is around 650, 660. Mm-hmm. Do you think you will use the same metrics or you will say, okay, no, means the stock is expensive or how do you think about it? Because a lot of things have changed, but the discount rate remains similar. So will it be make sense to buy more shares or?
So a couple of things is one is if it is 650, the price is not 650. The price to us is 800 because of the tax. So that changes the equation significantly. You know, the buyback tax, right, which is 23%.
But that was at 300 rupees also, no? The last buyback. When
that's right. So, yes, correct. But you'll have to think of it as, so it was there the last time that we did it. It was not there the previous time that we did a buyback, which was in 2019. So, this is a factor to keep in mind. So, when we were looking at 50-55%, which you mentioned, you had 50-55% without any additional costs. And now you have a 23% transacting cost. So that's one. The second is you'll have to see it versus what opportunities you have to deploy capital in ships. Because that's the other opportunity that we have. If you think that you can get potentially opportunities to deploy capital in ships at reasonable prices, then we would like to do it. Again, the NAV by itself, you need to look at NAV in the context of what are the ship values that have gone into it. So we will look at that also when we decide on when we have to think about whether to buy the paper or not.
Okay.
But the 23% cost is a very significant factor here. I'd just like to emphasize that.
And secondly, my question would be, we are seeing a lot of offshore companies or vessel companies are also going for offshore wind farm type of servicing or contracts and all those things. Mm-hmm. Is it a viable business for us also, and can our ships also go into that business, or what is your thought? Because you keep on evaluating various other opportunities. How do you look at these type of services which are coming up globally?
So one of our vessels, one of our M-class vessels, which is the two most advanced vessels in our fleet, which are operated out of Singapore, One of those vessels actually operates doing wind farm support, helping in a wind farm installation work. Again, it's not a wind turbine installation vessel, but it works supporting the wind farm project. So, but the typical vessel for that, for the wind farm work is very different from ours. Maybe you can do some modifications. I'll check with our people what the situation is on that. I know that there are purpose-built vessels which are for servicing wind farms, but I don't think you can use the standard OSVPS, the AHTSVPSVs in that kind of work.
And is there something which hinders us from entering that business over a period of time? Means, can we just buy an asset and start servicing in that market? Or there is some qualification required for that business? And what would be the IRRs you will
get on that at all? Yeah, we haven't looked at those numbers at all, Himanshu, so I just won't be able to reply. See, the thing, but on the qualification, I think that, you know, the fact that we have a track record operating internationally with different kind of vessels, including some advanced vessels. We even operate wind well stimulation, diving support vessels, you know, they're pretty advanced vessels. I don't think we'll have a problem qualifying necessarily, but I don't know what kind of IRRs can be made on these because I just don't know what that market is.
Okay. Just interesting. And one thing, the crude tanker what we sold, so the prices have gone up, okay? But the proportion of our assets on the crude side is pretty low, okay?
Yeah.
And so, means currently I think only 7 ships are now remaining. So how are we thinking on that side? Because the order book, the lowest seems to be on the crude side.
Yeah.
Which effectively means the oversupply in that situation. In that space will take further time, or it may take much longer. Okay. And hence, this segment can do well much for longer period of time. And we have the lowest percentage of fleet. We sold one of the ships. So just some thoughts on that, or how are you evaluating the market?
Yeah, it's possible. And not 7 is what we have today. It's going to go down to 6 after we deliver this ship. Because we sold the Lavanya, the Jag Lavanya, and she's due for delivery in June. So we'll be down to 6 crude carriers. Obviously, we are not very happy with that situation. We would like to rebuild that fleet, but we'll wait for an opportunity. Yes, we would have liked to have more. I think 5 years ago, we probably had 12 crude tankers. Now we're down to 6. But yes, we would like to rebuild that fleet at an opportune time. And we're hoping we get that opportunity sometime.
And last question on cash on balance sheet. Earlier when our balance sheet had debt, okay, so we used to keep some cash, means principal and interest payment and all those things also cash for that. But with net cash on balance sheet, do we really require some amount of
you
debt?
You need to do it because the net cash, you still have debt repayments every year. So you still have to keep the risk capital to ensure that you keep that. You are able to meet those repayments even in a bad market.
If we repay the debt, so there will be a net cash. No, means 1100.
But you are not repaying the debt, right? We are not repaying the debt. There is, so let's say there's $370 million of debt as of March 31st. And there's $510 million of cash. But the debt exists and it's due to be repaid next year, the year after that, and the year after that, and so on and so forth. So you need to keep the reserves for out of your cash. It's only carving out a part of your cash notionally as risk capital. So out of the 510, part of it is carved out as risk capital. So it
but
doesn't
change. Will be not raising debt.
Sorry?
But will we be still raising debt in the market?
No, we are not raising debt currently. There's no reason to raise debt.
Okay.
There's no reason to raise debt, but we have repayments next year. And if there could be a shortfall in cash flows in a risk case, if there could be a shortfall in cash flows, that amount of cash will have to be kept in the bank without investing it, without being available for investment. So it's just a notional thing. It's just that you can't invest that money. In any case, we are not investing currently. And it's out of your 500, you will carve out, say, $100 million and say this is for risk capital. It doesn't change our actions.
Okay. And are we doing any in-chartering activity from our Gulf subsidiary?
No,
or
currently nothing. Currently nothing. We did that one transaction last year, but currently nothing. There are no opportunities currently.
Okay. Okay. Thank you from my side.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chris Narona, shareholder. Please go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Chris Narona.
Good evening.
I'd just like to get your thoughts on the capital allocation process.
Mm-hmm.
Is this not a, I'm talking to you in the perspective of as a shareholder.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a good time to think, I'd like to get your thoughts on issuing bonus shares, because after looking at, I know the 28-29% dividend, but after tax and inflation and currency, where I'm talking from, mm-hmm. the yield is pretty low. So mm-hmm. is this not a good time to think about, and or perhaps I'll ask you to give your thoughts on issuing bonus shares, where the shareholders could acquire paper instead of steel?
I don't get the logic of that, because the bonus share is simply an accounting entry which splits shares into the one share into more than one share. So how does it really add value? A dividend adds real value by putting cash in the shareholders' hands. Or you're just talking of the tax arbitrage of capital loss.
Not necessarily. I'm assuming that the company is going to develop over the next 5 years. So those bonus shares will also grow in value.
But it's just an accounting entry. We have 14.3 crore shares today. And let's say, hypothetically, we double it to 28.6 crore shares. It's the same amount of net worth, it's the same amount of cash, it's the same number of ships. How does it really help? I haven't understood how it helps. And it's not even a capital allocation. That 28 rupees per share which we are paying out is real cash which has gone out, which is almost 400 crores, which has gone to the shareholders. So I've not got the thing of, I know that a lot of companies like to issue bonus shares, but I don't know how it adds real value, and maybe it trades better, liquidity, etc. But it's not a capital allocation thing as such.
I'm talking about what your options are right now in terms of capital allocation. The cost of, as we have been discussing over the past few minutes, the cost of acquiring new ships is fairly high, so your capital allocation is not efficient. The shareholders, whilst we accept the 29% dividend, after tax and inflation, it doesn't work out in terms of to a very great yield.
Yes.
So we are working on the basis that these additional shares which you give to shareholders mm-hmm. will over time create additional value.
But it's just an accounting entry. Sorry, I come back to it. It's just an accounting entry of splitting shares. Maybe we can take this discussion offline, because I think we might be boring some people. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, did you have another question on the...
No. No.
Sorry. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Archan Pathak from Centra Advisors. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Congrats on great set of numbers. I just wanted to know, would it be possible for you to share the selling price of the Jal Lavanya?
No, we don't share sale and purchase transaction prices. These are generally bound by confidentiality clauses.
No worries. Second question would be, as we are witnessing the higher TC-wise for the product and the crude carriers because of the change in macro factors in the crude industry, going forward, can you just throw some lights on the crude demand and how do we see that panning out in the next 1 year or so? because I read somewhere the refineries are, you know, experiencing a downtrend on the margin, so that could lead to a subdued demand for crude. So can you throw a light on that? Thank you.
Yeah, so what you read is sort of correct, and the conclusion is also correct. So again, it's led by poor demand for the end product, which in this case is gas oil or diesel. So there's been the demand for gas oil and diesel has been quite poor, the demand growth, which is probably a reflection of industrial activity, because diesel is more an industrial commodity, unlike gasoline, which is more a retail commodity. And because of that, the refining margins are poor. If refining margins are poor, as you have said, refineries are less likely to increase their crude inputs, which means less demand for crude tankers. And if they are producing less refined products, there's less demand for product tankers as well. Yes, that is the situation currently. We are also in the middle of a little bit of a refinery maintenance season. And this, in any case, this period is traditionally the lull period for tankers. Typically, Q4 and Q1 of the calendar years, which is H2 of our financial year, tend to be stronger for tankers. So that's when you really see tanker strength. So yes, the fact that demand is not picking up is a little bit of a worry. It's a macro worry. And you can see it in the oil prices, with the crude oil prices. So we hope that this will pick up. We've seen the, you know, the high frequency data that you see coming out of places like China with regard to flights resumption. The data which you see coming out of OECD countries with regard to inventories, which are quite low, all of it seems to point in the direction that activity has to go up, crude oil demand has to go up, refined products demand has to go up. However, it's not yet happened. But still, tanker rates are pretty strong as we speak. So let's see what happens, and it's very difficult to call this. Because you don't know what's happening necessarily in some of these economies. But if the economies come back, then you should have pretty strong growth in demand, end user demand, which means that you will definitely have movement by ship.
Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Roshan Nair from B&K Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So just wanted to understand, when are the gas carriers coming off contract?
We have one coming up towards the end of the year. We have a mid-sized gas carrier which is coming up for repricing in end of May to June, okay, within the next 1 month. So we have bid for a contract in India. And hopefully we'll get that. We are L1, it's just going through the process. The other ships are going to come out between H2 of FY23 and early FY24 and early FY25. So basically after September, the VLGCs will come out.
Okay. Okay. And does the buyer have the option to renew at the same rates?
Sorry, does the charterer, you mean?
Yeah.
The charterers of these vessels? This is after the exercise of all options.
Where are the time charter rates currently versus the contracted rates for gas carriers?
So time charter rates are probably a little higher than the current contracted rates. $3,000 to $4,000, maybe $5,000. Again, it depends on tender to tender. Some tenders, it depends on how many people are bidding in a particular inquiry, but probably slightly higher than their current contract rates. Maybe $5,000 to $8,000 also. Okay. On the VLGCs I'm referring to. In the MGC, we're actually seeing an improved pricing from the previous contract.
Okay. And for product tankers, the order book to fleet ratio is currently 8%, which is very at very low levels. So at what level would you think that the outlook for day rates will be, you know, negatively impacted by order book to fleet being high?
Yeah, definitely not at 8%. But remember that the day rate thing is a very short term thing, while the order book is in the long term. So the reason why we always keep looking at the order book is that that is the only thing that you really know. But you know, the day rates are affected by what happens literally on a day-to-day basis. How many ships are available today to load a particular cargo, and therefore what price can they demand? So that is very short-term and very positional and very position-driven, and doesn't get affected by the order book. You know, and you've been following us for some time. You know that for the last 3 years we have been talking about the low order book. Yeah, and it's been 10%, around 10% for quite some time for tankers. But nothing happened for 1.5 years between middle of 20 till early 2022. Though the order book was really low, it only happened because something happened and trade, the market strengthened because some event happened and trade took off, or the demand for tankers took off. So the order book in the long term, it's a comfort factor. But in the short term, not really. It doesn't make a difference really to what our ships earn, you know, this month, 6 months down the road. It doesn't make a difference unless there is a big, big delivery. So, for instance, in VLGCs, you have a 10% fleet delivery within the next 12 months. But otherwise, okay, it doesn't really make a difference.
That was quite helpful. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you, Roshan.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devesh Jhawar, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Congratulations, sir, on a good set of numbers. Sir, I just want to ask that we have a lot of cash on the books. Are we planning to foray into the different business verticals, like if we are interested in entering the dredging business?
Yeah, thank you. No, we are not. We are content with the businesses that we do, which is the shipping business and the oil field services business. Within the shipping business itself, there's a lot that we can do, and we will stick to those places where we think we can. We have some competitive advantage. We have some knowledge that helps us to do well. So that's what we focus on.
Thanks, sir. That's all from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we have one text question from Ashish Gautam, individual investor. The question is, can you tell us about the outlook on the shipping cycle for the financial year ahead? And what are you going to do with the cash proceeds from the sale of ship in this quarter?
Yeah, so first, the outlook is really difficult because we don't know. And that's the honest answer. We don't know what the market is going to do. The tanker market happens to be reasonably strong now, continues to be strong. Dry bulk markets are okay. Gas carrier markets are also very strong. We don't know if that will stay true for next month or next quarter. All we say is that it depends on what happens to oil demand. Are the world economies going to go into a recession, or are we going to see a quick recovery in the economies, which then will have a corresponding recovery in commodity demand. So that's what we want. The one thing is that the supply side is not a worry. So all we need is for demand to do its job, and then we can have strong markets. Coming to the second question on what we're doing with the cash, the sale proceeds of Jaglavanya, it'll come into the treasury and it'll be invested in safe instruments, as always. You know, it'll just sit in the bank otherwise, waiting to be invested in the business.
Thank you, sir. There's one more text question from Subhav Sangvi from Windshine Financial Services. Can we prepay debt to reduce interest burden as we are cash surplus?
Yes, we did do that. Good question. We did do that last year. We prepaid almost $50 million in debt in the last financial year to reduce our interest burden. We saved a couple of million dollars by doing that. Wherever possible, we will look to do it. There are regulations with regard to this. So wherever possible under the regulations, we will look to prepay debt it's a good idea, and we will look to do that where we can.
Thank you. Participants, if you have questions, please click on raise hand button. As there are no further questions, I now hand the conference over to Ms. Anjali Kumar for closing comments.
Thank you, everybody, for joining in today and all those interesting questions. As usual, the transcript of the call will be on the website. The audio transcript will be there by tonight, and the written transcript will be there in a couple of days. Also, please feel free to reach out for any queries. Our team is always there to help you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. On behalf of Great Eastern Shipping, we conclude this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now exit the meeting.
Thank you.